Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And, Jim, we start with the good, and we certainly love to start with news that involves terrorists being thwarted. And actually, we're going to talk about that in the first two martinis, but the first one just happened. This is courtesy of the Daily Mail. A terror probe has been launched in Paris after a machete-wielding man was shot after trying to attack four soldiers outside the Louvre. The suspect was shot five times in the stomach and is in critical condition. He was shouting Allahu Akbar, Arabic for God is the greatest, according to the Paris chief of police, and reportedly had paint bombs in his backpack. A source close to the investigation claims the suspect is an Egyptian man who arrived in France at the end of last month. An unconfirmed report by TV network LCI names the suspect as 29-year-old Abdallah who arrived in France on a flight from Dubai on January 26th. Boy, it didn't take him long to get to work with this dastardly plan. After being refused entry to the Louvre, he pulled out the weapon and was shot by a soldier. Naturally, Trump tweeted following the news, quote, a new radical Islamic terrorist has just attacked the Louvre Museum in Paris. Tourists were locked down. France on edge again. Get smart, U.S. You kind of are the U.S. at this point, sir. But Jim, just as we talked about prior to Christmas, whenever terrorists get thwarted, it's fantastic. Great job by the guards in Paris, and glad to see there were no casualties other than perhaps a paratrooper who suffered the head injury. Hopefully he's okay. And other than that, it's just the terrorist himself.
You know, Greg, it seems like a statement on our age that this felt almost a little overdue.
Yes.
Haven't we reached the point where we haven't had a terror attack in Europe for a couple of weeks now. Aren't they? What did somebody miss a flight or something? I would also note that is the man's surname and also apparently his performance in terrorist training camp. How do you think that guy? He'll get caught. He's the kind of guy who would bring a knife to a gunfight, and that's literally what the guy did here. So, congratulations to the French armed forces and their efforts there. This could have been much worse, and I'm glad we can kind of joke about this, and I'm glad that this was a very unsuccessful one. I had not heard the detail, Greg, that he got paint bombs. Do you think his aim was to get into the Louvre and start, like, destroying priceless piece of art?
This could very well be. Some of them are protected, like the Mona Lisa's behind glass and so forth, but there's a lot of others that are wide open there.
Wasn't this what the Joker did in the original Tim Burton Batman movie?
Jack Nicholson, yeah, absolutely.
Right. I figured out their Rosetta Stone. I figured out where they're getting their ideas from, so we can blame Tim Burton and Prince. Glad this turned out the way it did. I've always kind of wondered about whether terrorists would start, on the one hand, you'd say, oh, it's only an object. It's replaceable. It's not a human life. And generally that is correct. But obviously there are certain works of art, certain things you have in museums that they are special to us. They are part of our history. Imagine somebody attacking the National Archives and trying to, destroy one of our founding documents or something like that. These would be very symbolic targets. And maybe this is a indicator that either Al-Qaeda or ISIS or whatever Islamist group this guy's affiliated with, that they may be aiming for things like that. And so, just an indicator of the continuing adaptability of the threat and the fact that our leadership needs to be every bit as adaptable. But all in all, this is a pretty good day in the war on terror, considering what could have been.
Absolutely right. So, again, great job by the security forces there. Let's move on to the bad martini now. And this is kind of a double-barreled one. It's both involving Kellyanne Conway as well as the media. On Thursday, Kellyanne Conway appeared on Hardball with Chris Matthews, and he was asking her about the Trump executive order and the temporary ban on travel from certain nations that have big terrorism problems. And Kellyanne Conway was trying to point out that the media didn't have a big problem when Obama imposed this on Iraq for a number of months. But as she tried to explain why Obama did that, she got her facts clearly wrong. Take a listen to what she said.
I bet it's brand new information to people that President Obama had a 6-month ban on the Iraqi refugee program after two Iraqis came here to this country, were radicalized, and they were the masterminds behind the Bowling Green massacre. Most people don't know that because it didn't get covered.
The Bowling Green Massacre. And so people pointed out that the Bowling Green Massacre never actually happened. Some were saying it was when Ohio State beat Bowling Green University by a lopsided margin. any tweets involving Ohio State winning are not funny. But when it comes to Bowling Green, this happened in Kentucky in late May 2011. This is the New York Times explanation of what she was referring to. Two Iraqi citizens, Mohanad Sharif Hamadi and Wa'ad Ramadan Alwan, were indicted on federal terrorism charges. According to a Justice Department news release from January 2013, the two men had attempted to send weapons and money to al-Qaeda in Iraq with the aim of killing American soldiers there. Both defendants pleaded guilty to the federal charges, and Mr. Hamadi was sentenced to life in prison, while Mr. Alwan, whose fingerprints were found on an undetonated improvised explosive device in Iraq, was sentenced to 40 years in federal prison with a life term of supervised release, unquote. Conway this morning clarified that that is the case she was referring to, and then in a series of tweets blasted the media for also getting other things wrong, including bringing up the MLK bus story again. So, Jim, a lot to talk about here. Kellyanne Conway obviously should have known that the no massacre actually happened. She should not have attacked the media for other things when she just should have explained that she got it wrong and clarified what was a serious plot that was thankfully foiled. And the media here, of course, is spending much more time talking about how she got the massacre part of the story wrong than that refugees were in this country plotting to kill Americans.
Just coming over the wire right now, a statement from Bowling Green Mayor Bruce Wilkerson, quote, "I understand during a live interview how one can misspeak, and we appreciate the clarification." Again, you know, yes, she's thinking about terror attacks in her mind, and she goes back and she remembers something that doesn't fit the category that she's talking about. Obviously, the wording Bowling Green Massacre. I realize people say the media ignores the flyover states, but you'd like to think we'd pay attention to something like that. When I heard this, what came to mind, we take everybody back to 1996. I guess it's technically ancient history, Greg. It's more than 21 years ago. It doesn't feel that long ago to me. But basically, so America's getting really excited for the preparations for the Olympics being held in Atlanta, Georgia. In about a month or so, we have the Khobar Towers attack. And then I'm going to say about a month or so before the Olympics begin, TWA Flight 800 crashes off the coast of Long Island.
Right.
And there's an enormous amount of speculation that it's terrorism. Some people say they saw a missile flying up. Some people say they saw something flying down. And I wrote about this in one of my books. And the short answer is, you know, despite the thorough investigation of all National Transportation Safety Board, probably the single most extensive look at an airplane crash in American history, there's no indication this was actually terrorism. A lot of people speculated that it was. Pierre Salinger, the former press secretary of John F. Kennedy, that made this like his public crusade. And the problem that, you know, for anyone who's speculating along these lines, that, you know, one, there was no group that ever took credit for it. And the second thing, which always would seem odd about a terror group blowing up a plane and then not telling anybody about it. And then there were all kinds of speculation about the U.S. military had accidentally fired a missile and all kind of stuff. All the government conspiracy theories require so many people to be in on it and then never open their mouths that it just simply strains credulity. So, but anyway, so years later, the 9/11 attacks occur, and both George Stephanopoulos and John Kerry at separate points the days after are listing other terror attacks, and they list TWA Flight 800. And of course, all the conspiracy theorists jump on them and say, "Aha! You know, George Stephanopoulos and John Kerry have just confirmed that it was a terrorist attack." No, they weren't. They were just misspeaking. And they remembered at that time where after the plane went down, they, you know, there was discussion, you know, people asking, was this a terror attack? I imagine this is pretty much what was going on in Kellyanne Conway's mind on television. She's thinking of cases involving refugees and terror attacks, and she comes up with this one. It was not an attack. They were arrested for attempting to provide weapons and money to terrorists in Iraq. You know, can we all kind of go tee-hee about this? Sure. It's a good thing she corrected it. You don't want to overhype or exaggerate the terrorist threat, but you also don't want to understate it either. And so, as I was going to say, Greg, is the Trump administration doing anything else other than having a brain fart on national television? Like, aren't they doing, like, major policies that you think readers and listeners would want to know about? But, hey.
Why, when you can do that on social media, you can just have people laughing at them instead
yeah.
of the substantive
yeah,
policy.
Go Bowling Green Massacre. Now, I'm not saying this hasn't lent itself to some really good jokes, including the Bowling Green Massacre was my favorite XFL franchise. for those who remember the short-lived professional wrestling sponsored. But again, the amount of attention from the media on this compared to more matters of more substance is depressing and not a good indicator of what we can expect from the media as the Trump term rolls on.
Yes. Focus on serious stuff. And if you screw up, just say you screwed up. You don't have to point out everybody else's mistakes in the last couple of days as well. So amazing. All right. On to the crazy martini now, Jim. And back to the same topic as our crazy martini from Thursday. And that was the protest that turned into riots at Berkeley in connection with the scheduled appearance of Milo Yiannopoulos on campus, obviously a controversial figure. And so yesterday we condemned, and rightly so, the violent, violent protest that destroyed a lot of property. You talked about the woman that got pepper sprayed in the face on live TV and all sorts of other heinous things. But former Labor Secretary Robert Reich has decided that he's just going to spread rumors. He even says they're rumors, but he's going to go with them. He was on CNN last night. Apparently he does some teaching at Berkeley. The first thing you're going to hear in this clip is him talking about the rumors that he heard. Then Don Lemon follows up with him, and Reich just doubles down.
You know, there's rumors that they actually were right-wingers. They were part of a kind of a group that were organized and ready to create the kind of tumult and danger you saw that forced the police to cancel the event.
Do you think this was a strategy by Yiannopoulos or right-wingers? They put this on so they could, in an effort to show or that, you know, there's no free speech on a college campus like UC Berkeley?
I wouldn't bet against it, Don. I saw these people. They were very, they all looked very, almost paramilitary. They were not from the campus. I've heard, you know, I don't want to say factually, but I've heard that there was some relationship there between these people and the right wing and the right wing movement that is affiliated with Breitbart News.
Rumors, I don't want to comment factually. Look out, Alex Jones. The false flag crowd is getting bigger, and Robert Reich is leading the liberal side of the parade.
I was about to say, I remember hearing almost this entire, like, note-for-note diatribe from Ron Paul. once you get into that, you know, like, when something embarrassing happens to your side, you always kind of want to say, well, that person doesn't really represent us. You know, pro-lifers would say, Eric Rudolph, the guy who blows up abortion clinics, is not really a representative of the pro-life movement. And, you know, once you're killing people, we throw you out, we throw you out of the club.
Yes.
It's a bit like Fight Club, right? The first rule of Fight Club is you don't talk about Fight Club. The first rule of pro-life club is you don't take lives.
Right.
That's kind of right there in the title there. I think we tried to make it as clear as possible. In the case of this, I am sure the protests from the left, if you're a standard liberal who doesn't believe in burning things when you don't get your way, then the Berkeley riots are really embarrassing, right? You'd like to think your movement, your ideology, people who believe what you believe are better than that. And sadly, in some cases, they aren't. However, to then go the next step and say, well, maybe they were conservatives in disguise, you know. At the very least, I'd want you to, like, catch a guy and get a confession. Like, give me something other than it is really emotionally inconvenient for me to recognize that there are yahoos and hooligans and nut jobs and criminals on my side. And so thus, perhaps my ideology is not as morally pure and superior as I thought it was. Robert Reich, by the way, is, you know, like, he's always kind of out there in terms of economics and all that kind of stuff. But you didn't think he was going, you know, Greg, I did not picture him to be a regular listener to, say, Art Bell, the famous conspiracy theorist late night radio show talking about crop circles and aliens and black helicopters and stuff like that. You know, like, this is going to be, you know, we're going to have a lot of futile debates going on in the Trump era. If every time something happens, like it's interesting, they argue in the realm of fake news, we can't even agree on what actually happened. There's a completely contrary accounting of events or things like that. Well, if you listen to Robert Reich and your first thing is, so what happened in Berkeley were all these right-wing infiltrators who dressed up in black masks and all that stuff. I guess you think, Greg, this has been going on since the WTO back in 1999 and Occupy Wall Street and Black Lives Matter. I mean, look, you know, could it conceivably happen? Yes. Has anybody ever found a person to come forward and say, yes, I'm a conservative and I went to lefty protest rallies and I set stuff on fire to make them look bad? If that happens, I'll have to take a look at that. But in my case, I have not come across that. And this seems like an implausible and exceptionally convenient explanation for them, that every time somebody on team left does something bad, it's really a team right member in disguise.
I'm just trying to picture Robert Reich in his tweed jacket in the middle of this riot, just trying to observe people. Something tells me he didn't get as close as he's leading us to believe.
You picture him saying, like, so what do you think the minimum wage ought to be? Pop, you know, giving them some version of the Charles Murray bubble test or something like that and saying, aha, you know.
That'd be a good way to smoke them out. Yeah, if they say 15 or fight, then you know they're liberals. And if they say it should be based on the value of the labor they provide, sure, then maybe you've got some infiltrators.
Much simpler. Do you have domestic beer in your refrigerator right now? And they say, you know, is it Pabst Blue Ribbon? Is it ironically purchased or is it genuinely purchased? Aha, there you go.
Oh, that's the way to figure out who's causing the mayhem.
There you go.
All right. The Super Bowl is coming up on Sunday. It's Super Bowl 51. It's the Patriots and Falcons. Jim, there's a lot of people out there saying that maybe even though they don't really like the Patriots, they'll cheer for them this time because people are getting on Tom Brady about his friendship with Trump, like we talked about earlier in the week. Other people want to see him stick it to Roger Goodell. I say, and I think you probably agree with this, that cheering for them is just kind of letting the evil side win. I'm going for the Falcons. I don't have a good feeling about the game for the Falcons. I think the Patriots will win, but I will be rooting for the Falcons.
All right. So I've decided to engage in a social experiment, Greg.
Okay.
Because let's say, you know, listeners know that I am a New York Jets fan. They know that the New York Jets have not won the Super Bowl in my lifetime, but I do have in vitro memories. But I obviously have, we've had since 2001, ironically, the New England Patriots have pretty much set the standard for excellence in the National Football League. Really good just about every year. Some years they win the Super Bowl, a couple years they lose to the Giants. But generally they stand out as being, you know, defining football excellence for, you know, a year and a decade and a little bit more now. Greg, I'm going to try an experiment because I thought, but what is the one thing that could like bring it all crashing down? What is the one thing that could like bring completely reverse everybody's fortunes and make the Patriots collapse into decades of mediocrity and disappointment and misery and put the Jets on top and turn them into the next great NFL dynasty? And I realized all it takes, Greg, is for me to root for the Patriots. That's all it's going to do. I am the jinx. I am the one that have caused the Jets. So I've decided I am rooting for the Patriots in the Super Bowl, New England fans. I am on your side now. So if we come back on Monday morning and the Falcons have pulled off this improbable victory, it will be incredible evidence that, yes, I am the jinx. I am the cooler. And I can destroy any sports franchise by rooting for it, because that's the sneaking feeling I've had throughout all my years of being a sports fan. So there is my prediction. My prediction is that the Patriots win, and they win big. They win huge. Got to go find a Brady and a Belichick hoodie, and I'm going to use Gillette razors this weekend, and I'm just going to do everything I can to become Mr. Patriots, and we'll see what happens. Maybe I'll really enjoy the chance of rooting for a winning team, or maybe the fates will turn, New England fans.
Can you honestly, in your gut, in your heart, truly cheer for them, though, or is this just on paper?
It's going to be tough. But the thing, the two things that I'm noticing, one are that you have to look hard to find a football team that I have less of an opinion on, up or down, than the Atlanta Falcons. When they're not on national television that often, I just don't have that much of an opinion on them. So it's very hard to be emotionally invested. There are a couple NFC teams I'm a little more I gravitate towards. So I don't feel like I'm hurting a good team by adopting the Patriots for this game. And the second thing is that, again, when, you know, Greg, have you polled the Chicago Bears on their views on alternative minimum tax and renewable energy and enhanced rescission authority, right? Like, when you root for the Bears, you're like, okay, I need only the conservative Bears over here, and don't hand the ball to the liberal, even though I hear that Devin Hester guy is pretty good, you know? Like, it's such a category error to demand like political loyalty from your sports team. So, and oh, by the way, you know, Woody Johnson, owner of the Jets, is going to be the next U.S. ambassador to the United Kingdom, in part because he supported Trump in this last cycle. So the idea that this is, you know, I'm baffled by the Patriots fans who are like, oh, I can't root for this team anymore. Brady and Kraft and Belichick, they're all friends with Trump. I can't, you know. So there's space on the bandwagon. And I'm just kind of looking at that and say, okay, let me get on and just see what happens. And maybe the Patriots win and I stay on it, which is, you know, then maybe it just becomes, all right, it wasn't me. As we are having this conversation, Greg, I am getting tweets from Patriots fans saying, don't do that, Jim. They're suddenly beginning to realize that. And I point to my record, not just the Jets, you know, my favorite TV shows like Twin Peaks and Firefly get canceled. Serenity bombs at the box office, even though it does really well. I remember 2016 cycle, my guy, Bobby Jindal. I curse people by getting on their side. So finally, I'm going to make it work for me and make every Jets fan I know overjoyed.
I think I recognized your hidden secret there because you mentioned Woody Johnson being up for the ambassadorship to the UK. Maybe, since Trump loves winners, if Belichick wins 5 and no coach has won 5 before, he'll appoint Belichick to something, and that will remove him as coach of the Patriots, and he can be ambassador to somewhere, and then instead of him saying, you know, moving on to Pittsburgh, he could be like moving on to the Middle East.
There you go. I like that. My concern about Woody Johnson being the U.S. ambassador to the U.K., man, the Russians are going to intercept a lot of messages.
What's the diplomatic equivalent of a butt fumble?
There you go. It's kind of, well, maybe we can ask the Australian Prime Minister if the reports are accurate.
On that note, enjoy the game. We'll be back on Monday. Jim, have a good weekend.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us. And join us again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.